Hello, I'm professional talker Jenny Rudolph.
I'm liberty trainer Ben Atkinson.
I'm eventer Simon Greaves.
Welcome to Shut Up and Ride, the show where Ben, Simon and I discuss what life in the horse world is actually like. The highs, the lows, the hilarity, and with some special guests thrown in. We all know that equestrians want to spend more time with their horses than their humans, but hopefully this will give you something to listen to when the horses have had enough of you and they want you out of their stable. So this is episode one, and I wanted to start off with why we all wanted to do a podcast, but I think I've got to address what the goat in the room. I can't start our first ever podcast without having to explain why Simon Greaves keeps having to disappear. Simon, what on earth?
Oh, God, it's eating my leg. Say hello. She says,
oh, hello. Okay, right. Not everyone's going to be watching this on video, so can you please explain what is on your lap?
So basically, I've got a goat on my lap. Because, so my partner James, he loves his animals, and that's his job, and he's got lots of baby goats, baby pigs, and all that kind of stuff knocking around at the moment. And this one hasn't got a mummy at the moment, so she's coming to live with us for a bit.
Okay.
But she's quite hardcore. She kind of she likes doing her own thing, and she keeps on running around. And so I'm just going to keep her under arrest for a minute with us.
So Ben, you've never actually met Simon, and your first introduction to him, we were meant to be doing
this
a podcast.
Is a terrible impression. I'm so sorry.
To talk about horses, and the first thing he sent us on the WhatsApp group we've started is a picture of a bloody goat. first impressions of Simon Greaves, Ben Atkinson.
Well, I have to say, I've spent my afternoon going through Simon's social media, looking at pictures and videos, being like, right, I need to get clued up on Simon. And then, yeah, I was like, oh my goodness, he's
very professional. You are so good.
I need to have my A game on. And then you instantly relaxed me when, for the first half an hour of us trying to set this up, you've been chasing a goat around the house, which has been, yeah, rather marvellous.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? It really is ridiculous.
It is. Right. So while the goat is settled and not pissing anywhere,
she's sucking on my finger.
Okay, this is just getting weirder by the second.
She's hungry. That's the problem.
So one of the reasons we wanted to start this podcast, for me, someone who spends their life interviewing riders and trying really hard not to swear, but I can swear on this. I'm going to put the might have expletives thing on when I learn how to.
She's a happy lady.
So one of the reasons I wanted to do this is I feel like, I'm going to get so many haters, but who cares? It's a lot of the time, because I tend to talk to riders in a very professional environment, we can't always say what we want. We can't always say what we think. We can't always ask the difficult questions. We can't always ask the stuff that people really want to know. And there is this massive, I think, there is a divide, and there's also a crossover between your world, Ben, and then Simon's world. And I just think bringing you two together, we can have a look at both worlds. We can bring in other guests. We've got a hit list of who we want to see on this. And we're also going to be throwing it out to social media. But Ben, what was it that when I suggested this podcast, what is it that you think, like, what is it the equestrian world is missing that we think we arrogantly can fill?
I think apart from goats. So you and I have done a lot of, you know, live events and stuff together. You've interviewed me at a lot of live events in the UK. And
a lot. I've talked to you a lot.
A lot. And I think that is, it's wonderful. I love the interview stages at these big events we have. And I think it's, the concept is beautiful, because it's the idea of bringing the public closer to the riders, the trainers and the other professionals that all make up the industry, and allowing the public to see a little bit of that.
Just sucking on Simon's finger.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. It's keeping her happy and it's keeping her quiet.
I'm so serious, Ben, and all I can see is a goat.
If only it was as easy to keep Jenny quiet, eh?
Sorry, it's a grown-up chat. Go for it, Ben.
Sorry.
And I think what's actually quite sad is that we're actually not free to talk about what we'd like on those stages, really. We are told what we're going to talk about, and we keep it on track, and it's very much get in and get out. And nobody ever wants to talk about the topics that the public are talking about. It's almost, I'm sure you both agree, it's this weird thing where the top-level professionals, if you want to call them that, they're pretending these topics are the biggest in the industry. And however, actually, the 95% of horse owners who make up the general public are really concentrating on other bigger topics, but the mainstream media doesn't want to focus on them. So yeah, I think that's one of the main reasons for wanting to do this.
We're gonna touch. I totally want to go. Sorry, Simon.
I totally agree with you on that. I think, like, you know, we've got these staged. The word is staged, isn't it? We've got these staged kind of things where we have interviews and people say what they're supposed to say, and you know, you get it with like lecture demos and all that kind of stuff. People say what they're supposed to say because it's the correct thing. And sometimes I think we kind of miss out on what actually is going on. And I think we've got to be so careful with that, like in the equestrian world, because my kind of opinion, for what it's worth, is that we're on a bit of a knife edge in what we're doing, especially competitive riding. I think we've got to be so careful with how we go ahead with this. And the old days, and actually they're not that old a days, when, you know, it was like, oh, I'll just give it a whack and kind of get on with it and, you know, it'll be fine. But they are well and truly gone, quite rightly so. And it's more about, you know, the horse. And there has to be a kind of transfer from that old thinking into the new. And we're actually in a really bad time to be doing that change, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think as well, from a media point of view, I have to edit. I film riders all the time, and I have to edit to make sure it's always kept in context, and that's not always the case. And I'm constantly saying to riders, explain why you're wearing spurs, explain why you're doing this, explain it, because I think a lot of horse people don't ride at a level and don't always have the understanding, but are very happy to be keyboard warriors and take a rider apart. But at the same time, riders need to be accountable and explain if they're doing something that maybe people don't understand. They have to explain it. But a snapshot in time doesn't always tell the real story. Do you know what I mean? So there's,
absolutely.
Seen dressage slightly overbent, and it's like, that horse likes having its head there, but you can't explain that.
I would sort of say as well, though, I think sometimes from what I see in the comment sections and stuff on things, or talking to the general public, I feel like some of the reason that the sort of the mob, if you like, can see it, like you're saying, balancing on a knife edge, there's a lot of tension. But I feel like that comes from the big topics not being discussed. And then that's why the public bite down so hard on the things that they do catch and they do see, because there's this sense of a kind of, you know, a cover up or a hidden thing, or because there are topics we're not meant to talk about, then that's why this happens. So I actually think by being more open, people would become more relaxed, because when something is openly talked about and is frequently talked about, it loses some of that. Loses some of that aggression from the people, because I think part of that frustration from people is just wishing that they could be heard or be involved in the conversation. Because at the end of the day, I know I believe this about all of our events, you can call the riders the professionals if you like, but if people don't, you know, buy tickets to watch the classes, to turn up to the events, to, you know, pay the subscriptions to the channels and buy on, like, the money leaves the sport. And so I think that's such a big thing, is that it is actually one team together, and it's all got a bit lost.
I think as well, what we're going to do with this podcast, we are going to tread, we're going to have fun with it. As we've already discovered, there's going to be goats. Yeah.
There might be a baby pig next time.
Oh, good. Exciting. Good. Oh, that bloody goat. I think we're going to kind of try and, I think we're going to tread a line here. I think we're going to probably annoy a few people, because it's not going to be a popular opinion. I will never sing again on this podcast. I want to talk to some dressage riders about their opinion and what's been going on in the dressage world. I would love to talk about event riders and stick rules and all of this stuff. And at the same time, I want to have a laugh with this. So I'm hoping that anyone who's listened to this for the first time is going to come on the ride. There's three of us for a reason, because Ben and Simon are the most fucking useless people to get hold of on the planet. Sorry, guys.
We try our best. We try our best.
So it'll either be me and Ben, me and Simon, or all three of us, or two of us and a guest, hopefully lots of guests. We have a hit list. Or it'll just be me and a guest, or it'll be these two. I'll have to leave it to the boys, maybe on occasion. God knows what it'll end up like.
And that sounds pretty dodgy.
But because we can both, all three of us, talk forever, I thought this episode, we would make it a little bit about you, Ben, as we all know. You're not scared of the limelight. And then anyone who still wants to listen after episode one, we'll talk about you, Mr. Simon Grieve, and your many, many accomplishments. And then we don't need to talk about me. And then episode three, We'll see what people are wanting and then hopefully get a guest. But in this episode, I think, because I don't want to, I want to kind of delve a bit more into you guys because you are brilliant. And I know, Simon, you two have never met until this point, apart from WhatsApp. That is right, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
And however much I know you want to ask Simon lots of questions, and I know the conversation will probably take that turn that you two will start chatting across your two disciplines. But Simon, what is your first impression of Ben from now speaking to him and what you've seen on social media and what you know about him? Like, because, Ben, you do get this, don't you? Oh, you're the guy who does the natural horsemanship. Like,
yeah,
that is a lot of what I hear you get.
Yeah, generally, I would say my opinion of myself from what I would say from the outside is that I find that people who are into natural horsemanship and don't compete would be like, oh, what Ben does is great. And then people who do compete generally look at me as a bit like, oh, that's fun. But not really like, which I get. Because I think like, and I get that because we're not as constrained as you guys are. The course for the cross country is the course and the time is the time. The course is that for the show jumping and the dressage test is the test. Whereas the beauty of what I do is I'm not constrained by those same ideas. So, for example, we were performing at Horse of the Year show. We did 7 performances over the week. The first 3 were the same and the last 3 were the same. But the 4th show in the middle, I entered the arena and the horses had gone really sour. You know, they were just from doing the same act all week. So I just did something completely different because my job, my obligation is to entertain. And I think the beauty I love for that from my point of view is it makes my life easier because I'm not, you know, constrained by those same things that you guys are. So I do get that from, do you know what I mean? Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've got an opinion of what people who compete think of what we do that's wrong.
So if you say you changed it up, Ben, does this mean you just did some kind of striptease and took your top off? Because I think the audience want that as well, if I'm going to be completely honest.
Oh, I went fully rogue. I remember on the way in, I went in, I felt the horses were, you know, needed something different. And I just looked up to the lads on the spotlights and thought, I hope you're awake because this is going to be different. It was good.
But the thing for me, like, so I don't know you, Ben, at all. Like, you know, I've obviously seen stuff that you've done, but like nothing of any, like, not in any great detail, sorry. But obviously I did a little bit of research, a tiny bit, because I'm not very good at researching. But there seem to be lots of branches to what you do. It's not just this performing. There's also the stunt riding. There is dressage. There is coaching. There's like loads of different things that you do. So can you just tell me a little bit about the different branches that there are to what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So the business as a whole is actually split into 3. It's sort of 3 businesses in one. So there's the main Action Horses film team. So that's horses for film and TV. So that's stunt horses. So we've had 7 horses on a job.
Peaky Blinders and stuff.
Yeah, like the horses we've had on a job this week have had to gallop into a riot as police horses and rear up and kick people with their front feet and stuff. As well as like the carriages and the actors' horses and all of those sorts of things. So that's sort of one side of the business. Then there's the performance team, which is sort of my main part that I run. So, you know, that's traveling around England and we're going to America later on in the year and stuff like that. So that's more based on the performance. And then
that is so cool. It's so cool.
Thank you. I think it is. And then the third part is the teaching. So we have the BAM, which is the Ben Atkinson method, which is sort of our program for educating people with horses. So, and we're launching the BAM app very soon. So yeah, that's our business in like a 3.
I'm gonna interject. BAM.
Ben Atkinson method.
BAM. I get what it stands for. Is it
like... Wham bam, thank you, ma'am.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's got a few kind of connotations there, Ben.
Oh, so we were having one of those like serious business.
Bloody amazing man. Yeah.
With where we're coming up with names. And the reason we stuck with BAM was for all the things that both of your brains went, that's weird. Is it good? Is it terrible? Can I make fun of it? But you won't forget it. And that's the, you know, BAM,
yeah,
it's easy.
I suppose it's a bit like shut up and ride.
Yes, like shut up and ride.
Yeah. I get it. It should be called a goat sucking on Simon's jumper, but
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, sorry.
It's a little bit like, I'm going to put this up if when we're going to get an Instagram page going, and I'm going to share a lovely picture of Ben that I shared with Simon this morning. And you put that next to the one, bam, a picture of Ben on six horses with his top off. I tell you what.
I'm not doing anything with my top off.
It's all right, Simon. You're buff waiting to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I've been on the rowing machine today and I was running yesterday. So it's all good.
Well done. But yeah, I think, Ben, I think there's going to be a lot of ladies and men who are going to want a bit of bam. Not going to lie.
They're going to want a bit of bam.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I love it.
Sorry.
But anyway, so going back to, like, so, Jenny, you're kind of like, you know, taking us off the beaten track here a little bit. So how did this all come about, Ben? Like, when did you suddenly decide that you were going to do this Liberty stuff that you do? And like, where did it all come from? Is this a family thing, or how did it work?
So the business started from a family thing. So my dad was like he used to deal horses and have a riding school, and then someone turned up one evening with some horses, some lessons, sorry, and they enjoyed the lessons, and they did historical battle reenactment. If you've ever seen that at events, you know, where everyone dresses up in historical stuff, and they said, oh, could we hire the riding school horses to ride in this battle reenactment? And we're from Yorkshire, and money's money. So we said, yep, we trained them, got the shotguns out the cabinet and got them used to stuff and, you know, took the horses to this job. And at the end of that day's work, someone came and said, could we hire those horses to do this exact same thing on a film? So that's sort of how the business started in its whole. But for me, the Liberty thing was, I was 4 years old and I was at an event, and I saw a man called Tony Smart, who helped me a lot when I was younger. And he trained all the horses for the films like, you know, like Gladiator, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Braveheart, Black Beauty back in the day. And he had this big black stallion called Vandal. And it was fully vocal trained. So, you know, like a dog, you could be like, Vandal, lay down. Vandal, come up.
Wow.
And rear. And yeah. And I sat on this lorry ramp with him training this horse. And I just thought, well, if you can do it, I can. And thus that was the start of the.
So did you just early. Like to go straight home and start doing that yourself at home?
Yeah, and I was probably, you know, I was 20 before I was any good at it. But
so
yeah,
basically you're kind of self trained then.
Yeah, I've had four official lessons in how to teach Liberty, and then apart from that, sort of trained my sort of comic.
Did you find them
methods.
Useful?
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Heartbreaking, yeah. But very useful. So I got a lesson with a guy called Frederick Pignon. What? Frederick Pignon is the guy. And I had three of the lessons with him. And I guess in the Liberty world, he'd be like a, you know, he's like a Carl Hester of the Liberty world. And I went in thinking I was brilliant. And it was a little bit like my Lights, Camera, Atkinson experiences with Gareth and Jace. In the fact that I went in for this lesson and was like, showing off, aren't I brilliant? And then Frederick just proceeded to give me a dressing down in front of everyone, left me in tears. And
oh no, mate, you're no good. Actually, you need to start from the scratch.
Oh yeah, exactly that. To the point where he gave me such a dressing down that everybody else spectating at the clinic then was like, yeah, basically laying him into him's free game because Frederick's like said he's like this, but. To me, that's probably one of the biggest turning points in my career because I had two choices then. I could, like, you know, say, oh, screw you, Fred, and you're wrong and I'm right. And I'd have still been stuck where I was. But I didn't. I just was like, right, yeah, what I have been doing has been wrong. I've learned that. I can move forward now and be better. So we just, yeah, we had to start from scratch again.
I want to ask a question to both of you. I'll start with you, Ben, maybe. Do you, like, that's quite a level of arrogance that you had going into this. You thought, oh, I can go home and I'm going to have a go at this. And then obviously you turned up. There's also the arrogance of youth. Do you guys think to do your sport and to compete at top level and do what you do in front of lots of people and have a goat suck on your jumper like's happening right now, Simon, it's so off-putting. Do you think you do have to have a certain level of arrogance?
Yes. Oh, not
silence.
Arrogance.
Yes.
You need a level of confidence within yourself.
It's called it's confidence. Yes, mm. It's confidence. It's not so, arrogance. Like okay. You get some top riders that you would say, like for example, Izzy Taylor. She's a really, really good friend of mine, and you could be forgiven for thinking that she's very arrogant and that she's. But But she's not. She's not arrogant at all. And in fact, she's one of the hardest working people that I know, and she doesn't expect anything from anybody. But she is massively confident. Like, she's one of the most confident people that I know, in that she is doing the right thing, that she is doing everything correctly to, like, do the right job. And she's, and that's what's made her so good, her confidence in herself. And I wouldn't say that's arrogance at all.
Yeah.
And I think Oliver Townend would be the same, actually.
What about you, Ben? Do you think you started out with arrogance and now it's confidence, or you're still a bit arrogant?
Come from two different sides. So one is how you feel about yourself throughout your journey in the industry. So, like, when you get good praise, you could be, you know, that's easy. But when you're getting criticism and stuff, I think it's the reason I wouldn't say arrogance, because arrogance would deny ever taking anything from anybody. But within reason, you need to be able to build up this thing of, like, hang on, like, you're giving me grief, but what about what you do? And would I invest in my, what about your life would I like for my own life? Is what I always think, you know, if someone's, don't take advice from somebody you wouldn't want to be like, sort of thing. So I think there's a certain, there's a level of confidence within there. I think, I know I've been told by people before that I've come have a reputation for being arrogant from people who've met me at events. But that, what I would say that is often is people who decide they want to come and speak to me in the hour before I'd go on performing. Because at that point, I'm in my, I have a, you know, I have a process, I have a setup, I have a sequence that I go through, I have a checklist. And at that point, I'm like, no, I'm working now. Like, the same as if I was anybody else at their job at work. Just because I'm at a showground doesn't mean that I want to come and talk to you about what you, where you went on holiday and did that. After the show, yeah,
what
2 hours
kind of
before
hay net
the
your
show.
Horse uses?
Yeah, but an, like that 1 hour before you're on, I need to get my head in the game. And I think sometimes that can, people can perceive that as arrogance. Because as well, you know, at these shows, they're paying a lot of money to have us there. So it's my job to make sure that...
So you're saying it's focus?
Yeah. And I'm saying what could be perceived as arrogance is that focus, or that, like, I know, like, you know, I know for myself, I'm better if I don't really speak to anyone leading up to going in. I like to just be in my own mind. I like to listen to music. Yeah. And so if you don't know me and you're not my friend, then you could be like, oh, he's arrogant. But it's not.
I am.
Because I found that with when I first started competing internationally, which is a really long time ago now, you did a long format. So there was roads and tracks and steeplechase.
Showing your age. Showing your age.
And I always remember when you're trotting off to go and do roads and tracks, you're always going past other riders. And every single person would say, good luck, hope you have a good ride, hope that went well or whatever, because you're coming back from steeplechase or what have you. And the only person, I remember being at Windsor Horse Trials 1 year, and the only person that didn't say anything as I trotted past them was Pippa Funnel. And I always, after that, I was like, do you know what? She's so arrogant. You know, like, she just, like, she's obviously really good, but she's really arrogant, and she's a bit of a bitch, really. And but obviously now I know her, I know that she's absolutely lovely, and she would help anybody. Like, she would help anybody, and she's, you know, she would talk about horses all day long and about your horse all day long if you asked her. But she was focused, really focused on her job, and that's why she was so bloody good. She still is so bloody good, because she's got that focus and she can do that focus. So I think, like you were saying, Ben, things can be completely misconstrued because you're focusing or you've got your mind on other things. I've had people say to me, oh my God, I thought you were like really horrible because like, I saw you in the warm-up at some dressage thing somewhere and you'd run me over with a death stare. And I'm like, well, that's mainly because I hate dressage. But it's not, you know, it's not that I'm horrible and it's not that I'm, you know, being arrogant. It's just that's what that situation was.
Yeah, used to work for Jock Padgett. Remember Jock Padgett? Well, you obviously, Kiwi eventer for anyone who doesn't remember him. And I used to help do him his PR and sponsorship. And I love Jock. And we are very, I'd see him and we'd have a kiss on both cheeks and we'd have a hug. And then the first big event I worked for him at was badminton. And I remember seeing him and we were to meet up by the Kiwi tent. They always have a great boozy tent by the lake at badminton. Good on the Kiwi team. And ran over to him and went to do my normal hug and kiss. It was the morning of cross country day. And I'm not joking. He just was, all right, Jen. And like, he was so serious, like so serious. And I was like, oh, oh, what have I done wrong? And I, because I, probably slightly arrogantly, because you do, you just like, oh, what have I done? Oh my God. And I'm a total anxiety freak. I always want to do a good job. I hate upsetting people. So I was like, oh my God, I'm so worried. Oh, la, la. And then I suddenly dawned on me. I was like, he's about to go out and risk his life. Because that is genuinely what you guys do. You risk your life. You standing on a fucking horse in front of thousands of people, you going around badminton or Burley. It is putting your life on the line. There's a lot of money at stake. There's a lot at stake. And there was me thinking that I'd annoyed him, but it wasn't anything about me. It was the fact that he was just like, the last person I want to hug right now is anyone. I'm in the zone. I'm ready. I'm focused. But that's so interesting that you're the same for your performance. Because for me, when you go out, Ben, you're so jovial and you're so engaging. It just wouldn't occur to me that you'd be very similar before you go out.
Massively.
Yeah,
I think yeah, but me, you're a performer, aren't you? That's yeah. You know, it's a performance at the end of the day, isn't it? And part of that jovialness, you have. Well, I suppose we have it a bit with the eventing with owners and stuff like that. Sometimes you have to put a little bit of a front on.
You are on show.
You know, you may be having a really crap day, and yeah.
I remember Ben Hodday interviewing him once before Burley, and he'd thrown up in his lorry. Poor guy.
Here's another spin on it. So one of the reasons that I avoid people like the plague before events, the riot get quiet, that I've just developed this, is, and I'd be interested, like, from both of you, if you've ever had this, because I don't think people do this to people who are competing. But when I'm warming up, so often, people will be like, oh, don't fall off, you'll get really hurt. Like, don't come off. Don't get hurt while you're in there. While I'm thinking, and I'm like, I don't think this happens to other people when they're in the warm-up ring, getting ready. But it'll happen to me at nearly every single event. And so that's one of the reasons I'm just like, I don't need that. I don't, why would you want...
No, you don't need that negativity in your life.
Like, and you've got, I'm like, I'm stood on two horses, I've got four more in long range, driving a team of six in hand, getting ready to go in, go over the jumps, thinking about everything, and then you've just got some kid at the side, or some, like, even it's kids, it's not so bad, but when you see some adult being like, oh, don't fall off, you're like, why? But, yeah, I don't know.
That's mad, like, I've never had that at any event that I've done. People just... The only thing that's happened with me is I remember I was walking around the start box at Burley once, and a friend of mine was in the crowd, and she kind of shouted, said, oh, are you okay? Good luck. And I was like, no, I'm absolutely shitting myself. And I did say, that was one of my first, I think that was my first Burley actually. And I spoke to my sports psychologist, who I didn't have before, had her afterwards. And she said, so what's your kind of, what did you do at Burley? I was like, oh yeah, then my friend said that. And I said, I'm shitting myself. She said, you don't vocalise those things, Simon, because that's really bad. But never, I've never had somebody saying, oh, you should be shitting yourself. Or they might be thinking it, but like, no one's actually said something like that to me.
Yeah.
And you creamed in recently, Ben, and kind of put me through the ringer because we were meant to be doing some work together, but that's by the by, I'm not angry. Sorry, that's really
He was
really...
poorly. He was poorly. It wasn't his fault.
He fell off a bloody horse, standing on them. One job, stay on the horse, Ben.
Before I was injured. Yeah, that was fun. Yeah.
Is it not your confidence at all? Are you affected by it? Is it not your confidence?
No, because I got back on and did it before I went to hospital, because I had to make sure the horses got over the fence. No, I was actually going to say I'm probably one of the last few from the generation of where you fall off at a riding school, break your wrist, and they're like, yeah, gone. It's not like that anymore, is it?
But yeah.
Yeah, that's how we were. Well, what was my granddad's favourite thing he used to say to us if we fell off? Well, you've scared that pony. Well done. And you're like...
Well done, you idiot.
Yeah.
When did you, Ben, decide to take what you do in the ring, which is... unbelievable, honestly, Simon. One day we'll have to go up north if you can bear. I mean, you're more north than I am when I live in England. I'm right in Canada right now, but I mean, you are so north. Like, I'd get a nosebleed if I go that far north. But when we have to watch him in action, because I always open with my starting bit whenever I interview Ben on a stage, that you can see him in these arenas and it is nothing. When you see Ben training at home and he whistles and two duns gallop flat at you. And you're literally shit your pants and you're like, oh my God, there's two horses, there's a gate open, they're galloping at me. And then he whistles again and they literally just go and park themselves next to him. Extraordinary. what made you go, oh, I want to do this in front of loads of people? Because that's quite a, like, it's all very well doing this in your arena. Or did you set out doing this with the thought of doing it in front of people or just for TV? Like, what came first?
Well, the TV came first, sort of. But my family have always performed. So I did musical theatre from being 4 years old to being 20. My mum and dad met at musical theatre. So
I love your mum and dad.
Like, yeah. So we've always.
So you're
performed.
A good singer then?
Singer and actor. I can't dance. But
can you sing, Ben? Ben, can you really sing?
I can sing. I've played Marius in Les Mis before. Yeah. I've been Joseph.
Well, give us a note.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
I'm not singing right now. Guys, I've just told you today that I'm on antibiotics because I've got a chest infection.
Yeah. And Jen, that's like when someone says, oh, I speak French or German or Spanish. And they go, oh, say something to me now then. It's like, and literally, you just can't, can you? You like, kind of like, you just, everything just kind of closes down.
I was wanting some kind of fucking exclusive here, lads. Come on, Ben, open up your vocal cords. I don't care if you're sick.
The first time I actually performed properly, I was 9 years old. And that was because we'd been to a show and I'd seen Lorenzo performing. And it was the first time I'd seen anybody standing on the horses. And I came home and I had two little white jumping ponies at the time. And my childhood logic, I would have been about eight at the time.
Oh my God, did you try and stand on them?
I didn't try. I did. I was just like, he has white ones. I have white ones. This is obviously the only important thing. However,
I want to be like him.
Here's an exclusive for you then. I don't do, this is so stupid as a child. So this is, but when I first did it, I was like, how, like, obviously they need to be attached. So I just got these two ponies and I just attached their nose bands together and then stood up on them and went flat out around the arena until obviously my poor father comes out. Obviously no parental supervision. Like, and yeah, dad put an end to that. And made me start doing it a bit more properly. And then these days we do it without bridles. So we've come on a bit. But yeah.
Good old it's Mark. Been an odd journey. I do love your dad.
I just think that it's so cool. It's just such a, I love how it kind of like it's naturally progressed into what you're doing now. I just think that is brilliant.
It is a wonder you're alive, in all fairness. Jill and Mark, your parents, must have been like, I get worried about my children crossing a road outside the back of our house, and we live in a cul-de-sac.
If they knew I was doing dangerous things with horses, at least they knew where I was. At least I was at a yard.
Are you scared of
somewhere.
Anything? Are you scared of anything, Ben?
I'm a massive wimp.
Jenny
when it
Rudolph.
Comes to horses. I'm the biggest coward. I will not ride anything that I don't. If I get on something and I think it's a wrong one, I'll just get off. Because what's the point? Like, if it's mine. If it's my youngster,
mate, I'm so with you.
Yeah, even my wife will fall out with me, George, because like she had some of her youngsters on the yard, and she's like, "Oh, will you ride this 3-year-old for me?" I was like, "Yeah." Got on it, rode it round for about two circuits, and was like, "No, this is gonna go bang." And she's like, "No, he's fine." I'm like, "No, it's yours. You ride it," because I think you just
he's totally not fine.
Like I'm not. I think that's a big thing that everyone thinks because I do stuff like standing on the horses and I, you know, done all the Cossack trick riding and the stunts on the films. It's not bravery. It's repetition of foundation and techniques and practice until the point where it runs so smoothly that you can increase the speed and the danger, but you can run on autopilot. So it's to me, it's all about training.
Yeah, I mean,
for the horse and for you.
I had that with going back to Pippa again. Like, I don't really speak to Pippa very often, but it's kind of going with this. And I remember speaking to her somewhere. We were at the vets and we were having a chat. And I just said to her, "Are you like you're super brave? I'm definitely not." And she was like, "No, I'm not. I'm not super brave at all." I was like, "Oh yeah, you are. It was just stupid." She said, "No, it's all." It's basically calculated and it's organized and she believes in her training and she believes in what she does and she believes in the horses that she's got. And
yeah,
so she doesn't see it as being brave. She just sees it as being organized and having all the training in place and dotting her I's and crossing her T's. It's basically how I understood it. So she always says that she's not that brave. I mean, God, what that woman's done. She must be brave. But like, But I see what she's saying. Like, if you've got everything sorted, and
have you ever heard of the saying? You will not rise to the occasion. You will sink to the level of your training. And that's been
a very good saying.
Yeah, that's the basis for sort of everything for me. And it's that as well, like, especially when I'm teaching people, if they say they would like to perform like we do, I'm like, cool. Imagine if rehearse what you're going to do at the show at home and say that's 100%. When you get to the show, especially if the horse hasn't gone to a lot of show, well, if you get to the show, expect 85 on a good day. If the horse hasn't been to a show before, expect 70. Do you know what I mean? So it's that idea of you're probably not going to perform on the day as well as you train. So you need to be training at a better level than what you're going to ask. That's how we work. Is that the same for you?
It depends on the person, really, I think. I like to be trying to train just a little bit higher level than what I'm actually competing at. But it's everyone's different. Everyone does different kind of things. And I mean, for me, so much of it, it's obviously, yes, it's about training, but it's also about confidence. And with my teaching as well, I'm quite into making sure that my students are really super confident. So if they need to train at a lower level, then they train at a lower level, if that makes sense.
Can I ask a question about training? Well, I'm going to.
We're waiting with bated breath.
Okay, so this is going to be such an unpopular opinion. I've got that song off. Does anyone listen to BBC Radio with Greg James?
Unpopular opinion.
We might have to think of our own theme tune when it's going to be something that the armchair experts are going to chase me down for and stab me in the street. But I'm going to say it. I don't believe that everybody can be trained to work with horses. There, I've said it. Oh, feels good. So one of my main gripes is, and I think a lot of it can come from maybe your neck of the woods, Ben, and from people who do a lot of kind of the liberty in hand work. Now, I am terrible at languages. I am never going to be able to learn French. I certainly am never going to be able to teach French. I'm never going to be able to speak to someone in French. I'm never going to be able to train someone to play basketball. You have to accept that there are some things you're just not going to be good at. But I think with horses, anyone can buy a horse. And I think people tend to believe that if I go for training, I can be good with horses. But I genuinely, in my heart of hearts, believe there is natural horsemanship. There is people who are good horsemen, who have this ability to read horses and see what they can see and talk to horses on a level. But I don't think everyone can do it, no matter how much training or how much you stand there and chase a horse with a whip or jump or have these amazing lessons. I just do think that people do have their limitations. But I also think in the world, oh God, that some people take advantage of people and say they can do it. And that anyone can be a horse trainer that can do this level of training. And anyone can teach a horse from 3 to be broken in and do it. And I just don't think not everyone. I can't speak French. I'm not going to teach my kids how to speak French. If you don't understand horse training or are not a good horse trainer, you shouldn't be training horses. You should get something that's already done it a bit. And you see,
I think that should be unpopular opinion. And I think you're absolutely right. I think there are people. There are different levels of people, like, you know, there's the Bens of the world and, like, you know, the Piggy Marches of the world, the Holly Smiths of the world that are so in tune with horses in general. Like, they're amazing, amazing people. And, like, they can read horses, so they're in tune with them. And then you kind of go down the levels and then you go past me and then you go lower. And then eventually you do get to people that just they can't understand
them.
They find it difficult. Yeah,
but those people seem to be the ones who buy a 3-year-old.
And also, but like you say, they are the ones that end up getting exploited.
Yeah, I just do think there is a bit of exploitation. Ben's smiling and laughing. I don't know if it's good or bad smiling or laughing, or whether he's like, yeah, let them all buy 4-year-olds. I'll teach them how to sit on them.
No, it's funny you said that. So at this clinic I was at the weekend, a lady came up to me and said, I've never done Liberty before and I really want to get into it. I was like, oh, okay, brilliant. She said, would I be best starting with like a 2 or 3 year old? I said, do you already own this 2 or 3 year old? She said, no. I said, have you broken in many horses in your time and dealt with a lot of youngsters? She said, no. So I was like, yeah, absolutely not. Like, that couldn't be more inappropriate, because if you've never broken in a youngster and you've never done liberty, how on earth could it be a good idea to do a new skill with a new type of horse that you've never worked with? And to me, that's more of the nuance to it. So, like, if you were, like, I'm the worst car driver in the world. I am terrible in a car. Like, honestly, I wrote 3 cars off in a year once. I am the worst driver on the planet. That's why I'm not allowed to do my lorry test, because no one will let me drive a wagon with the horses in. So what I mean by that is...
So you get driven everywhere. You jammy what's it?
No, I have to drive the car, but someone else drives the lorry. But what I mean by that is...
I'm really sorry. James has just come in. He's going to take the goat. Sorry. He's going to say hi.
The goat's called Jenny now, James.
The goat's called Jenny, apparently, now.
Oh, it just bleated. Oh. It's a... The goat's a boy. You've been calling it a girl all this time.
Oh, yeah. He's got a massive todger.
No wonder he's so annoying.
So what I mean by that is me driving my pickup, which is big and slow, is completely fine and I'm dead safe. But if I was to buy a Ferrari, I'd probably kill myself and someone else. So that would be massively inappropriate. And I think that's where it more comes, like, I think horses can be enjoyed by absolutely everyone. Not everybody should own a horse yet. Maybe you just need to have riding lessons and have yard lessons and stuff and learn about horses before you own one. So I think it's more like that. But I do agree in that there has been an explosion in educators, which can't necessarily be as a whole a bad thing. But one thing that I found very frustrating is that if you look at social media at the moment, most people who put themselves out as educators, especially in my part of the equine world, 90% of their posts are telling you, other people say this and they're wrong. And it's like, well, that's great, but why don't you post something telling me what to do once in a while, opposed to what not to do? And I think that creates a very negative, within it. And I think that's why you get people that get badly horsed and people training with the wrong people and all of that, and it all just gets colluded.
Would you ever turn someone away or say to them, no, I'm not training you with that horse?
I've done it.
If you didn't think they were up to it? You have?
No. I've done it because the person brought the horse to my yard for a lesson to work it at Liberty. They said they work it in a round pen. I've got a round pen. So I said, cool, just turn him in the round pen, let him have 5 minutes to have a look around, and then we'll start the lesson. And this horse was trotting around. It was a big, beautiful horse. And do you know when you turn one in a new place and they're trotting around and they're massaging with their tail in the air and their ears are pricked? And I said to the lady, I said, oh, this horse is, look at him, isn't he magnificent? And she said, well, no, I'm very unhappy. I don't like it when he looks like this. I think it's, no, I don't like, and it was basically telling me that this horse that was beautifully going around this arena, nice and happy, was wrong. And she couldn't see anything good in that. And so I literally just said, oh, yeah, no, let's stop.
I don't think this is going to work, mate.
Yeah, I was just like, we can't see eye to eye at all. So that's the only reason I would do that. Otherwise, I've told people that I think they would have a happier life with an easier horse, possibly. But
I've, no one wants to I've had to people, that. I used to run a yard in Spain. And I was one of the, well, you have the fields in Spain are where they are. And we had a field that was kind of fenced off next to a cliff. And I looked up from the arena where I was teaching and I saw these two girls chasing with whips a stallion round the field, but like properly scaring him. And he was like crashing into the fence and then running back because stallions are idiots. And I was like, oi! Girls, get down here. What are you doing? You can imagine what kind of instructor I was. Quite shouty. Very shouty, in fact. and I'm like, what are you doing? And they were like, oh, we're trying to do join up. What? They were like, yeah, well, he's really difficult to catch. So we thought if we chased him away, he'd come back to us. And I think that's kind of a little bit what I'm getting at is what you share online can be massively misinterpreted if you haven't followed the steps from A to B to C to D to F to E, and you're not a natural horseman who can interpret what people are training And I just think, I think trainers who share their content online and share, have demos, and which both of you do, and you have masterclasses, you have a real duty of care to, I'm sorry, but the people who don't necessarily, A, watch all of it, or B, have that level of understanding that a horse will go off a cliff if you scare it enough. Do you see what I mean? Like, I know you're looking at me in complete shock, Simon. But I mean, this is a so I think that really scarred me. And I've been in my journey through television, been very kind of aware of people take stuff completely literally or totally misinterpret it. And so I try and protect riders from saying the wrong thing on cameras and sometimes edit stuff out that I understand, but I know that a lot of the horse people might not understand. But it can be quite terrifying.
But also, I'm imagining when you were in Spain, that's a little while ago now. How long would that ago would that be?
I was 25, 26.
About 5 or 6 years ago.
Simon. Thanks. Love you. Thanks.
So even 5 or 6 years ago, social media wasn't what it is now. So, yeah. And they were doing that off the back of, well, seeing something.
Demo.
But obviously not. But whereas now, we are literally bombarded with all this stuff, like all the time. I don't know what you guys are like. I'm terrible. I'm flicking through Instagram all the time, Facebook, whatever, TikTok. And you're bombarded with all this stuff about how to do this and how to do that and how to do the other, and so much of it is incorrect, or they don't read the horses right, or whatever. And but people are going to go and try and do those things. Now it's quite worrying, really. And I don't know how you police that. Like you can't police that.
I was just going to say, I think there's a missing step in between. So say, like, from my experience, I'll put a video out explaining something, or I'll do something in a demo explaining a technique and why it works. Another, like, someone who's a friend of mine or knows me, who's also an aspiring trainer, will see that, like it, not fully understand it, not understand all the whys and the ins and outs, but like the concept, and they will take it and try and start teaching it to people. But they've got one or two things ever so slightly wrong. And so it deteriorates. And then they give that lesson to someone else, and then they teach it to someone else. And it, do you see what I mean? Like, it's a bit like Chinese whispers. It deteriorates diluted as it goes along. And then 10 people down the line, someone uses a method which is nothing like what, say, mine was. And they're like, oh, well, it's crap and it doesn't work. And you're like, no, you've changed it so much. Like, that isn't what we do. And I think that's a big difficult thing with... Like, yeah. people just trying to, you can't watch a 3-minute video on Instagram or YouTube or Facebook and then think you've fully understood a concept, not only for yourself, but then to teach other people. I think that's insanity.
Simon's looking. Simon, your face. But
I think this is the thing with social media stuff and like the fact that, well, not just social media, stuff online and what have you. I just think it's so dangerous and you get those people that kind of start commenting on these different posts and stuff and telling people how they should do this and how they should do that. And they don't actually have the experience or the knowledge, and people actually listen to them.
I think we could do a whole podcast on social media. I think this is something I think we should do a whole session on, of your experiences on it and other people's experiences, and maybe reach out to the ether and get other people's experiences on it. Because as we know from people, like, it's been unbelievably bad, but it's also brought to light some of the horrible training that's gone on. It has done good.
I had a horse for a client. She got sold it. She'd never seen it, bought it unseen from Spain, brought the horse over. She paid me to ride it because she was terrified. I rode it for 6 months and I advised her to sell the horse because I said, he's just not right for you. It's an expensive way to be miserable. She sent it to someone else. It started bolting. It came back to me. By this point, the horse was pretty trashed. I mean, you know, if I say something bolts when I'm on it, it bolts. It's like, you know, when you get the tears coming out your eyes. And so in the end, this woman said to me, she was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this horse. And I said, well, I'll give you 800 quid for it. And she paid a lot of money for it. And I said, I'll give you 800 quid for it. And she said no, and she shot it. And it was a beautiful, absolutely stunning 5-year-old. And what do you do? How do you deal with that? She couldn't ride it. and no one else would buy it. I wanted to buy it, but I only wanted to give them 800 quid, so they shot it.
What was her reasoning for not selling it to you then?
She wanted 5,000 for it.
Okay, so either it's 5 grand or nothing, and it's dead.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre. I don't get that at all. I don't get the logic.
That really made me
You're giving
me
that horse
face.
The opportunity.
Yeah,
I bet.
Oh, I've got so many stories like that from working in Spain, but we'll save them for another podcast. Do you think did that change you as a trainer, or train the way you look at horses or people? Or
that kind of thing changes you as a person, not just as a trainer. Yeah. You know, it's just like, what the hell?
I've not had a training horse in since. I've not been able to have one in for a year since. Because I think it's made me harder with people now sometimes. Like, I like to try and assess people if I'm going to get into more of a longer term. Like, if I'm just going to teach someone one day at a lesson or a clinic, then that's a bit different. But, you know, to have a longer working relationship with people, I need to know that they've got, like, there are some people who have a love of what the horse can do and some people who have a love of the horse. And I want to be surrounded by people who have a love of the horse. But yeah, I think it's just...
That's made me go goosebumpy, that has. That's such a good term. That has so many meanings. I love that. That is... it's made me want to have a bit of a tear.
But it's true when you think...
It's like the most forgiving creatures, I think, that there are on the planet. They're so forgiving of us and they put up with so much crap from all of us. And I just think they're incredible. And animals, I really do. I wouldn't work with them if I didn't think that.
And this is one of the reasons I was so excited about this podcast, is because, Ben, you train in... I mean, you guys are on different planets, completely different planets when it comes to what you guys do with horses, as are all the disciplines. I was listening to this podcast that someone else does in America, and they're new to horses. And they couldn't understand why all the horse riding disciplines and people don't work together and there's not more money in it and all of this. I'm like, because yes, we've got the same animal, but it's different in so many ways. But I just think that it's going to be so exciting listening to you guys talking about training and what you guys do with your horses, because I think you guys all learn so much from each other. And I know you're both so open to learning from each other, the things that you do with your horses, Ben, and the things how you are with yours. I think there's so much synergy, even though you do it in completely different ways. We have been talking for 54 minutes, so I'm going to throw it back to you, Simon. Is there anything else at this stage you want to know from Ben in this first episode? I know we can't talk forever. There's more.
There's so much more I could ask this man. But, you know, we'll just have to come back next time and ask some more questions.
All right, you get two more questions.
I get two more questions.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, well, I want to go back to where we were. Like, you know, when did you meet your wife? Is she part of the business as well? You know?
I think I met my wife 3 years ago. Could be four.
It's only 3 years.
Talk about squeak.
It's only you longer than 3 years, and you've always been with George.
Must be four then. This November 24 will be our second wedding anniversary. But yeah, George is she's a farrier.
Mate, are you sure that's right?
What?
You've got to get that right, sorry. otherwise you're going to be in trouble.
She's a farrier, and she's done some, she enjoys dressage, she has warm bloods and stuff, and then she also rides in the shows with me doing crazy stuff now. So yeah, it's great. And then, like, it probably is family business, because George's family are all farriers and they're all doing horses. And then there's like me and my dad and my mum and everything all working on our farm. So, yeah, it's lovely.
So she's actually quite a fundamental part of the business then?
Yes, massively. Yeah.
And so my partner is totally non-horsey and we don't do anything together in a business sense. So, I don't know. How do you find that, working so closely with your partner? Like, is that hard? It must be quite hard at times, or is it a piece of cake? Is it like plain sailing all the way? If you say yes, then I know you're lying.
No, ironically, like, one thing that me and George find very funny is that, so when George and I met, how we met actually was that she was being, she was a rider on a dressage yard, and I was being paid to come in and teach the horses piaf and passage on the floor. So that's how we met, working together like that. Now we're married. Training horses together can sometimes get a little bit more vocally heated between the pair of us. I think the gloves are off now.
You both have opinions.
Yeah, we're very, like, I love working. The best thing about George and I working together is that when I'm at an event and I've got all hell on, you know, like, we'll take between 10 to 16 horses to any show. And then we've got you're organizing all the grooms and the riders, and then there's all the meet and greets and all that stuff. And I don't need to speak to George for her to know what's going on with me. You know, so she also knows every single one of my horses inside out and backwards, knows exactly how I like, you know, every curb ring, every hole on the bridles, everything. So I know that if I have to go off and, you know, meet sponsors or do a meet and greet or do whatever, then I can leave George. George will man making sure all the horses and stuff are done perfectly. And she's, you know, incredible at that. And she's fierce as well. So, like, you know, if you ever need someone, you know, and you've got those people being like, no, sorry, madam, you can't bring horses through it. She's going. So it works. It works really, really well.
I think that's wonderful. I mean, that's really, really cool that you guys work so well with each other. And yeah, it's always online, isn't it? I saw that this thing in them, that guy, oh God, I can't remember his name, but he was saying about how if everyone needs that one person that believes in them and are totally on their side, and it sounds like that's what she is to you.
She is, but at the same time, and I would say this is something that's where George and my mum are very similar, is that their praise means something, because they will also happily,
yeah,
just say, like, if I do something and it's crap, they will be like, that was really bad. Or, like, you need to cut that from the show, that's too weak. And, like, that can hurt, but at the same time, if you don't have people like that around you, their praise is worthless. Like, my dad, I love my dad. Jenny loves my dad. Dad's so nice. But dad's
so
nice. So
hot. I'm sorry. I'm throwing it out there. I've got such a crush on your dad. It's such an inappropriate crush. Sorry, Jill.
Inappropriate crush.
Jenny Rudolph, you're so bad.
Oh my God, he's just got a twinkle. I'm sorry, I've thrown it out there. I can't keep it in anymore.
But like, oh my goodness.
Oh my God, I can't believe I just said that out loud. This is the bad thing about not being having a camera in front of me. You know what I'm like, because you know me off camera, but I have no filter. I have honesty Tourette's. Like, I absolutely, but the moment you put a camera on me, I'm like, oh, I can control myself. I don't swear. I'm really nice. Well, no, I'm not very nice. But yeah, so I'm sorry. I've put it into there. Yeah, he's hot. What can I say?
I feel like this has been like a liberation for you. You've finally been
like, I've got it off my chest.
You can, well, I was,
she's
just
been unleashed.
You can say whatever you want. You're being recorded. And for once, you're just free. You can just say whatever comes out your mouth.
I know. I am employing me. This is, no one's employing me. But it gets embarrassing at Your Horse Live or somewhere where I normally have to interview Ben and Mark. So the pair of them has happened many a time, 3 days, 4 days on the trot, interviewing every single day. And I'm like, no, Mark can sit here. He can go in the middle. And everyone else is like staring at Ben. And I'm like, all right.
Oh, I love Mark. He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's a silver fox.
He is a silver fox. He is a silver fox. Yeah. Anyway,
that's why I'm looking
right,
forward to getting older. Because I look at Dad and he's aged so well. I'm like, oh, yes, I'm going to go with that fine mahogany.
Like fine wine.
Yeah.
But my other inappropriate crush is Tim Price. So I'm not sure, like, you take that as it
was. Yeah, but that's mine as well. You're
that's
not
your
alone.
Inappropriate crush.
I love Tim.
Oh, how can
Tim.
You not? I love Janelle as
he's
well.
He's just so lovely. He's just but, so yeah, lovely.
He is. Who's your inappropriate crush then, Ben? Let's get it out there. Let's finish the pod with inappropriate crushes.
Oh, you know who my inappropriate crush is.
Yay. Oh my God.
It's you, Jenny.
It's Jay the Tiger Hallam. It's got to be.
Oh.
Is that right?
Yes. That's it. Jay and I love each other so much that George says it's not even cheating. So it's fine.
It's, yeah. You're allowed to window shop. My husband knows I have crushes on people. You're definitely allowed to window shop. But yeah, no, honestly, trying to work with Jay and Ben at the same time is trying to field toddlers. And they're just like, no, you hang up. No, you hang up. No, chase me, chase me. No, chase me, chase me. It is, they flirt so badly.
Cute.
Yeah. But George doesn't bring you goats, though. This is the thing. This is where you are lucky, Simon, because James brings you goats. Baby goats.
Brings me goats and sheep, baby sheep and baby pigs. Piglets and all that kind of stuff. Lucky me. And puppies. And lots puppies. Of puppies.
Right. I think we've ended with our inappropriate crushes. I want to end while I've still got so much I want to talk to you both about. We're going to focus more on you next time, Simondo, or Simi, or Wee, as he's known to his friends, because that's the noises he makes when he goes over fences. What I want to do is, when we finish recording this podcast, we're going to ask guests what a question that they would like to ask to the next guest, whether we know who it is or not. Cool. And I've stolen that a little bit. Anyone watched The Diary of the CEO, but I think it's such a cool concept that I'm going to steal it. But because we didn't have a guest on, this is our first one. I asked my husband last night, if you could ask Simon and Ben anything. Now, my husband at a wedding is the person who breaks the ice. And I said to him, you are not allowed to ask your favourite question that you break the ice off at a wedding. Do you want to know what his ice-breaking question is to a table at a wedding? Even if we don't know the people? This is... Tell us your best when you pooed yourself story.
Mine's really recent. This is terrible.
I was about to say, I've had bowel surgery, so I got loads of these.
So, can you tell it on the pod? Are you able to tell us your poo yourself story? No, let's not go there. So his other question was, we'll save that. If the viewers want the pooing yourself stories, we'll do it.
Mine's perfectly okay as a story. Like, you know, it's not great, but you know. What's the next question?
He was like, if you weren't going to be horse riders, what would you be? It's not as good as when did you last shit yourself, but...
This morning.
It's only because his is really good and it involves him wearing a kilt.
God.
I know. Right. So, Simon, if you weren't going to be a horse rider, what would you be?
Probably an actor, to be honest.
Oh, would you?
Yeah.
Would you tread the boards or would you be into action and film?
I'd love film, but I loved acting at school.
Did you? Oh, God, I've got two, like, actors.
And I sang at school as well. So, like, I kind of, like...
Oh,
we can do a duo.
Come on, lads. I want next...
Oh, my God, we could.
Yes.
Right, I'm going to prepare something for you two for next time. I want to hear a duo. Don't ask me to sing. Right. Benjamin.
I'm not that great anymore.
Anymore. He's just clearing his throat. No, ask me, Jenny. Ask me to sing. Come on, give us can you give us a line? Or are you not going to?
No.
Right, Benjamin, what would you be if you weren't into chasing horses? Sorry, training horses.
I think so. My stock answer for this used to always be that I'd have been a PT. Because if I'm not with horses, I'm just in the gym. That's sort of my life. Mm-hmm. But I think my new real answer for this is because of some of my friends, some of my best friends in the world who I've been friends with since like I was a kid. They are the like proper free spirits. As in, like, I was on the phone to one of them the other day and he's like, we're going to buy a van and we're just going to drive to Portugal and then tour around Europe and just like, you know, sleep on beaches. And I think I think I would just join them. I think, you know, if I wasn't going to have this as a job...
You'd be homeless.
That does sound pretty cool.
You'd be homeless. That's what you're
saying. A beach bum.
I'd be in a van with harem pants and a guitar. Like, yeah, that's where I'd be,
excellent.
I think.
Right. On that note, we're going to sign off, boys. I'm going to ask one final question. If you could have... Who's the dream guest for our podcast? Who would you want to have on our podcast more than anyone?
Oh my goodness, the dream guest.
Yeah,
like,
dream
guest.
Does
it have to be somebody horsey?
No, it can be anyone. This is, sky's the limit. Wow.
Off panic. No,
can I have Andrew Scott on?
Who's Andrew Scott?
Andrew Scott. He's the hot priest in Fleabag.
Oh, yeah.
The Irish guy. I think he's really cool. Seems like a really cool guy.
That's a good one. I like that. Who's yours, Ben?
I haven't got a clue. I don't know. I'm panicked.
You haven't got a dream guest.
Put me on the spot.
or Ben Atkinson, because you know, he's really interesting.
Yeah. Right. Well, if you have enjoyed this podcast and you want to hear, maybe by the time we record another one, Ben's favourite go-to guest, please make sure you click the follow button, like it, share it, stay with us, because the more followers we get, the more chance we'll get someone to sponsor this, and then we can keep doing it. And if you have anything you want to feedback, get in contact, we're all on social media, we're going to have our own Instagram and everything. So yeah, give us a shout. What guests would you like to see? The next episode, we are going to be chatting all things Simon Grieve, and find out why his hair is quite so upright today. But I hope you've enjoyed the first episode. We finally got it recorded of Shut Up and Ride. Ben, Simon, thank you so much. I'm going to press the stop button. Did you just sign off with a salute and a click click?
I totally did.